get ready for an hour of fishing, hunting, and outdoor events from all over the great state of Alabama. It's time for Alabama's Great Days Outdoors. Join Alan White and Joe Baia with Great Days Outdoors magazine and their special guests as they bring you the latest weekly updates from the woods and the water. Alabama's Great Days Outdoors is brought to you by Brooks Motors in Thomasville and Great Days Outdoors magazine. Now, here are Alan White and Joe Baia.
All right, welcome into another show. I'm Alan White along with Joe Baia, and we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking wildlife management later on in the show with Mr. Daryl Bell, who actually writes our wildlife management column every month in the magazine. We're going to be talking about a new technique, fairly new, I guess, called no-till, no-drill. So I'm anxious to try that this year, and I'm sure you'll get a lot out of today's show with Daryl. Also, we've got some new information coming out from the NWTF about a program. We've got Mr. Matt Wilkins coming in later in the show to tell us all about that. They're introducing both children and adults to the outdoors. It's a great program. Looking forward to hearing the details. First of all, I want to remind all you guys that your license will expire next Thursday, the 31st of August at midnight. That's both fishing and hunting license. So, need to make plans to get those hunting and fishing license renewed this week so you stay legal. And just a public service announcements from us right here. Dove season's coming up soon. You might want to mark your calendar. The North Zone of Alabama opens on September 9th. The South Zone opens on September 16th. And on that day, Alabama Hunger Relief is having a dove shoot for the charity up near Atmore, Alabama, in the Canoe community. We've got corn and peanuts in the field, a lot of doves there. We hope they stay there. In order to find out all the details, you need to go to Facebook at Alabama Hunger Relief. Just log on to Facebook and go to Alabama Hunger Relief. We've got posts there with all the details, even got a video of some birds there. So you'll get instructions on how to participate there. Joe, it's still hot out there, buddy, and but people are still catching fish.
Yeah, they are. It's a good time of year to be a sportsman for sure. There's something for everybody going on. I've seen a number of reports this week on Facebook, and you know, if you go to our Coastal Sportsman's page, you can see a lot of that. Another thing you can check out on our Facebook page is our weekly giveaways. This week, we're going to be giving away a two-day, two-night hog hunt. It's in Beatrice, Alabama at the Beatrice Hunters Retreat. And the winner of that giveaway is Jamie Jones. So, Jamie, get in touch with us on Facebook, and we'll get you all set up to go up there and get you a hog. And also, this week's giveaway is a Napier truck tent. And these are one of these tents that you just put over the bed of your truck.
Those are so cool. Yeah.
So y'all check us out on Facebook and go and get in on the giveaways. We got a new one every week.
Well, Jamie's got a treat waiting on him at Beatrice Hunter's Retreat. I've hunted that land before with Larry Wilson, the owner there. And Larry tells me that we need to go do this hog hunt before deer season because he has a permit to bait these hogs. But after deer season opens on, you know, October 14th, bow season opens, the permit is no longer valid. So you can't bait hogs when deer season's in. So, Jamie, have fun, man, and take some photos and let us know how it goes. Let's get right into our fishing reports. The Mobile Tensile Delta is doing fine. Captain Wayne Miller's on it just about every day. Captain, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Alan. How are y'all?
We're doing good. You staying cool out there, man?
I'll tell you what, it's kind of tough right now. You know, these days, it is August, so
yeah, I have to keep just,
we got to suffer through it, man. It's but we can see the end of it coming. So yeah. if we can make it through this in September, then man, we're on to that fantastic fall fishing here on the Delta. So you know, but you know, the good news is over the last couple of weeks, I mean, we continue to see really good weights, and you know, the local tournaments here. I mean, it's taken anywhere from 13 to 16 pounds to win the local tournament.
That's surprising. I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people, I mean, it's just, you know, we're in that summertime grind, man. I'd love to tell you, you could run down there and, you know, there are fish, you know, jumping out, chasing shrimp on top of the water and everything else, but that's just not the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're in
that tough summertime grind where, you know, you get in the main rivers and, you know, you fish deep and really slow down. But, you know, the good news is, you know, I mean, a lot of people are telling me they're catching tremendous numbers, but just, you know, not really a lot of good quality fish. But you know, they're out there to be caught for sure.
Well, the September is coming, and September surprise is what we always talk about. You know, that's when you, in the certain parts of the Delta, man, you catch a flounder on one side of the boat, a speckled trout on the other side of the boat, a bass on the front, and a crappie on the back. It's always a surprise what all you can catch out there in September.
Oh, yeah, man. It's, you know, it's really good. And but, you know, for right now, you know, I'd just encourage people going out. I mean, I know like this weekend they've got the Dixie tournament will be going out of Live Oak. So there'll be a lot of people on the water. And, you know, but you can, you know, slow down with the plastics out on the main river. And, you know, the darker colors have seemed to be working a little better. June bug and, you know, some of those.
Mm-hmm.
Any you know, dark colored hue on the plastics. But there's still a lot of people catching fish on crankbaits. But you know, I think the most consistent by far bite has definitely been on the soft plastic.
Just a quick tip on keeping cool. I keep a little towel in my ice chest, kind of a watery, icy water down in there. I keep that towel in there, and just before my hat catches on fire, I'll take that towel out and wrap it over my head. Boy, it sure feels good too. It's just like having an air conditioner.
Some days when it doesn't take long for that to happen either.
I know. All right, Wayne, you stay safe out there, buddy, and thanks for the report.
Okay, guys, have a good one.
Let's check in with Mike Thompson. He's always got the latest scoop on what's going on in the northern part of our Mobile Bay and the Causeway area. Mike, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing fine, Alan and Joe.
Well, what's happening this weekend for the anglers who concentrate on the Causeway and the Eastern Shore?
Well, things are looking good. All the rivers are looking good. You know, the Tensaw, the Appalachie, Blakely, they're no longer muddy. They're taking on a green tint. You know the water's got to be salty when you see hundreds and hundreds of crab traps appear suddenly. So the crabbers are taking advantage of the crabs that are showing up at the top of the bay. So it should be good for the weekend. I do need to warn the anglers that are going to be fishing in the Saltwater Fanatics Tour. There are very few places to launch on the Causeway now because of all the construction that's going on around the Chocolata launch. You know, they're doing that big water project there. They've got the entire Chocolata launch blocked off. The little small Chocolata launch will only hold a half a dozen trailers. So if you're going to fish that tournament, you're going to have to, you know, launch somewhere else and move your way towards the Causeway.
You know, that big pipe they're putting all along the Causeway, I guess they're sinking it down in the water. I'm not sure exactly what it's for, but I was telling my wife the other day, I wish they'd put a bigger pipe so we could all drive through it. We could avoid that traffic on the bayway.
that's unbelievable. It's some sort of water, you know, project that's going through there, but it's got the ramps messed up. However, if you're going over to the Causeway and you're going to be looking for some shrimp, both of the dealers on both ends of the Causeway got plenty of shrimp. Scott's, Landon, and Shirley's, they got plenty of shrimp. They got plenty of fresh dead bait. One of the hottest things going, a lot of people are catching these little mangrove snapper. Anywhere there's any type of structure with a barnacle on it, it could be a pier, it could be a rock jetty. Did real good on some mangroves over in Arlington, according to Barry Scott. A lot of nice mangroves coming in. They got to be 12 inches again. You got to remember that. But they're real good eating fish. There's white trout along the ship channel, along some of the markers. You'll see several boats tied up out there catching white trout and the occasional ground mullet. As you work your way southward, you get to Gilliard. They're catching a few specks out there early. You know, like Wayne said, you're frying yourself when you're out there in that heat, so you got to be out there early if you're out there late, then you got to fight the lightning storm. So it's really an early bite. And as far as the best speckled trout fishing, it's been from Middle Bay south. So, you know, you check those day markers, those wooden poster beacons out there. When the crab, but most people don't know this, and I've mentioned it a lot, but when the crabbers out there pulling the channel, well, they get some crab trap or some other junk in their net. They need to get rid of it, and the best place is they'll place that junk right around those markers because they know they're not going to pull their nets around those markers,
right.
You know, because they don't want to get hung on them. And it actually starts building a little mini reef around those day markers, and that attracts a lot of bait fish. It attracts a lot of speckled trout, a few white trout, and if the bay gets a little saltier, there'll even be Spanish mackerel all the way up there.
And Mike, I've been known to catch a triple tail around Gale Yard as well. But what I want to know is how are you targeting those mangroves out? You know, offshore they're a real finicky fish. You got to have real small hooks, real light fluorocarbon leader to get them to bite consistently. I've caught a lot of smaller ones, and they don't seem as finicky up in the dirtier water. So, what are you guys using?
Well, just as you described, you got to go to a small hook because even the smallest hooks, those mangroves are the craftiest fish. They're craftier than a croaker. They're craftier than a sheephead. They will bite all around your shrimp except where the hook is. So you got to bury that little tiny hook in the shrimp. And most of the people that are catching them are actually using, popping corks and putting them around the rocks in 2 or 3 foot of water. And then, you know, obviously watching your cork. But like I say, they're real crafty. They can really steal your bait a chunk at a time. So the smallest hook buried in the shrimp is going to be your best bet.
I'll tell you another trick, too, is go and get you a handful of dead shrimp and chunk it out there with them and put your bait right in the middle of that. And it'll get them frenzied up a little bit. They get a little bit careless that way, too. Try that if you're having trouble.
Hey, that sounds like a good idea, Joe.
Sounds good, Mike. Thank you so much. Right. Have a great weekend, buddy. All right, folks, let's take a trip up to Smith Lake this week and talk to our good buddy, Captain Michael Walker. Michael is the owner and operator of Got You Hooked Guide Service up there. He also fishes Lake Martin, so we'll give you the contact number and the ways to get in touch with him a little later. Right now, welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, how are y'all guys doing?
Well, first of all, tell us what's going on Smith Lake this week and what we can look forward to this weekend.
I mean, honestly, some of the best fishing this lake has ever seen in the summertime. Your average trip is getting a mid-20, and we're hitting 30 to 40 pounders in the summertime.
Now we're talking striped bass here, right?
Yes, sir. We're talking... You know, our spring size fish, usually when we get our 30 and 40 pounders on a consistent basis,
mm-hmm.
and we're getting that right now on our daily trips in the summertime.
Man, are you catching them deep, I suppose?
Catching them deep. Right now, today, we've had 8, and our smallest fish was 18 pounds so far.
Now, Mike, we offshore, when we're fishing for tuna, one of my favorite ways to fish for them is with a kite. Y'all ever do any of that for stripers there?
We don't. I have thought about it. I've looked at it, but, I've only got so much time to cut
a lot of sugar for a nickel, I guess.
Right.
So you're finding them in these deep holes. How deep are the fish holding, you think, you said?
They're between 60 and 150 feet. Most of the time right now they're down in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having to pull them out of the trees. They're feeding in between about 160 feet right now when they're off the main lake points and in pockets. Constantly moving right now in certain areas. It's a lot of back and forth and hitting spots, but like right now we just hit one of our biggest fish of the day and it took us our fourth time coming to that same spot where we came to them, left them. Came to them, left them, because we weren't getting any action early on.
Hmm.
But at some point, we figured, instead of just babysitting it, waiting, hoping they eat, we just dropped back, and the four stopped today really paid off. So.
So if somebody out there has always wanted to catch a really big striper and put it on the wall, now's a good time to book a trip, sounds like.
Oh, yes, sir. I mean... Right now, usually I tell you to wait for trophy season in the spring, but I can honestly right now, if you look at some of our pictures on Facebook, You'll see the size of the fish we're catching, and it's compared to the springtime.
So how do we find you on Facebook, first of all?
Fishing 24/7 Guide Service. Okay. That's our Smith Lake business.
Okay.
And if you look up Fishing 24/7 Guide Service, you'll find us on Facebook.
And in order to book a trip, what number is the best to call?
205-503-2020.
Okay, 205-503-2020. Well, I guess the crappie's kind of slow. I know y'all do some crappie fishing, too. Tell us about that real quick.
Yeah, on Smith Lake, actually, the crappie are biting good. Smith Lake's not going to be a high number lake where you can match some of the Coosa rivers where mm-hmm. you can have a three-man limit of 90 to 90 crappie, and they kind of expect to get a higher number. Smith Lake, a good day is about 30 to 40, but they're 1.5 to 2 pound crappie. So quality size, but you don't get quite the high numbers you might get on some other reservoirs or rivers.
Sounds great. Captain Walker, thanks for being with us today, buddy.
All right, thanks for having me.
We're going to be right back with Captain Bobby Abrascato and a report from Miller's Ferry. Y'all stick with us.
You're listening to Alabama's Great Days Outdoors.
I'm Harry Brooks here with Brooks Motors in Thomasville. There's nothing better than football Saturdays in the South, and at Brooks Motors, we're ready to help you score big this season with our wide selection of new and pre-owned vehicles from Chevy, Buick, and GMC. The rivalries can get intense sometimes. Who knew an elephant and a tiger would become such enemies in Alabama? All I ever see are deer and armadillos. But at Brooks, we're all on the same team. Whether you're popping the tailgate or cheering from the stadium, and whether you're a fan of crimson and white, orange and blue, or anything in between, our knowledgeable Brooks staff members are already on your team when it comes to help making your next vehicle purchase. We can't all be winners on the football field, just ask the elephant and the tiger, but remember, you're always a winner when you shop at Brooks. Visit us online at buyatbrooks.com. It's game time.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available at this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure, whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains. You'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
Welcome back to Alabama's Great Days Outdoors with Alan White and Joe Byatt, brought to you by Brooks Motors in Thomasville and Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Once again, here are Joe and Alan.
And welcome back to the show. I'm Alan White along with Joe Byatt, and thanks for listening. Our next weekend fishing forecast for you comes from Captain Bobby Abrascato. How you doing, Bobby?
Good afternoon, Al. Joe, how are you guys?
Great.
Doing good. What's happening inshore fishing as far as inshore fishing goes for the weekend, man?
Well, through last weekend, early part of the week, it was really good. We had had some pretty good weather, and of course we fished on the Eclipse. That wasn't much of an event from the fishing standpoint, at least for me anyway.
Right.
No big changes. We had a good trip, but it wasn't anything that was exceptionally out of the ordinary. But it was kind of cool to say that we fished on that deal. But had good water movement, pretty good weather all the way through the weekend, and caught a lot of fish. A couple of days on top waters real early in the morning. We had some low light, and the fish bit top waters real good. And then last couple of days we're kind of going into this nip right now, and caught a few on top water this morning. And the last couple mornings, it's been mainly a bait deal. With shrimp when you can get them. By the way, shrimp are really scarce down on the lower end of the bay. It's hard to find them, and so I scrounged some out. But today, what was kind of a pleasant surprise today is the shrimp I had did okay, but the voodoos, we had voodoos tied on and top waters again early in the morning, and particularly early in the morning, the artificial baits outproduced the live. So maybe because there's not any shrimp in the water, the fish are more attracted to the artificials or something. I don't know. Whatever it is, it worked, But of course, we're going to nip this weekend, and so if you do get some bait, I think probably your best bet's going to be focusing on you know, places like the structure at the lower end of the bay, the gas rigs, that sort of thing, you know, down in the sound, particularly around the Dolphin Island Bridge area, you know, where you get plenty of water movement even on a weak tide day, you're going to need some water movement, you know, fishing with that bait. So those are the kind of places that I'd focus on, you know, and I always do when we get these weaker tides.
Well, you mentioned the neap tide. That's always my favorite time to go after triple tail. So I appreciate that you don't really target them very much, as I'm sure you would eradicate the population.
I'm not a threat to the triple tail population. I can tell you I'm real opportunistic. They have to be sitting right up under a crab trap buoy or a pole or something for me to go after them. I'm not into that pole hopping.
Well, you just call me if you see one. I'll make sure to get him out of your way.
I'll take care of that, brother. If I see one, I'll do my best to get him out of the way.
Well, I'm gonna have to
see him for me to fish for him.
I'm looking at your most recent article on greatdaysoutdoors.com, some live bait techniques for inshore saltwater fish. One of the things I'm wondering, and, you know, when we fish, a lot of times, you know, we hook a, let's say we're talking about croakers, we'll hook him up through the lips, or maybe we hook him just behind the dorsal, and I've got different reasons for why I do what I do, but I want you to tell me, where do you like to hook, you know, your live bait, whether it be shrimp or croakers? Do you like to hook them through the head, through the tail, or do you have different methods for different reasons?
Well, on croakers, first, if I'm fishing them under a cork, I hook them just in front of the dorsal fin, and you hook them, you want to hook them just enough, get just enough hook in the croaker so that when you get a bite, the key is you got to get the hook out of the croaker. So you want to make sure you just get enough hook in there to make your cast and let your bait drift. When I'm fishing them on a tight line, I just hook them through the top lip only. Right. You don't want to hook both lips because you'll end up drowning the croaker. You really want, if you just hook that top lip, he'll, you know, and put him out on a tight line rig in a current situation, he'll be swimming into the current and he can still breathe and they live a lot longer. And the other same deal with the treble, when you hook that croaker, even through the top lip, you want to make sure you cook just enough meat to where when the fish bites it, the hook comes out of the croaker and gets into the fish. If you're pulling up croakers that, if you're missing trout and you're pulling them up and they're scratched up and you still got the croaker on the line, you're putting too much of the hook into the croaker. You got to get that hook out of the croaker and into the fish. And so that's what's happening a lot of times is, you know, when you come back with that bait still on the hook after you've had a good bite, or even sometimes if you're reeling the fish in, you get him part of the way in and he spits it out and the croaker's still on the line. You're just putting too much hook into the croaker. And as far as shrimp goes, man, I get people that say, oh, hook them in the tail. 10 minutes, they're hooking them underneath the horn. That's the best way to hook a shrimp. They swim real natural like that. But when you hook them, you want to make sure you hook just the horn, not go through that sack where that black stuff is. That's all his important stuff. So I tell my clients, just take an extra second to make sure you catch just underneath that horn. Like if you spread your fingers out, you look at the little bit of webbing between your fingers. That's the little piece of the shell that you want to hook the shrimp on. And you can use them, and if you don't get bit, you know, if you gently take them off, you can put them back in the well and they'll still be alive. You got a perforated shrimp, but they'll still live. But if you put a hook in a shrimp and water squirts out of it, you're hooking them too deep.
Yeah, there's that little clear spot right underneath the horn. If that's what folks will look for, then.
And you got to take your time to make sure you hit that just right. Like I said, if water squirts out of that shell, he's only going to live for just a little bit, you know, so you got to. Got to take your time hooking those, and it's well worth it doing all of that. You're going to catch a lot more fish. The bait's going to stay a lot more lively, you know, and when you get those bites, you'll actually hook them.
You mentioned the nip tide this weekend. It's actually Friday and Saturday, and then we go back to a normal tide on Sunday, and it's a pretty good tide in the morning.
Yeah, that's, you know, when this tide flips after the nip, it's when we go into that good tide where you got the good full tide at daylight just starting to fall out. And that's when the real magic happens, because you got the two best things that'll happen for trout fishing, which is, you know, the start of a tide and daybreak. So I love this period that we're coming into next week.
And just for those who might want to know, the mouth of the Mobile River, high tide is at 6:30 Saturday morning and 6:22 Sunday morning. That's the high tide. Low tides are at 12:57 and 10:35 on Saturday. And then on Sunday, it's 8:03 p.m. So Sunday looks like the time to fish to me.
And you're going to really get into some really good stuff next week, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, Bobby, we appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. Y'all have a good weekend.
All right. Let's go up to Miller's Ferry and see what's happening with the crappie and bass and the catfish with Mr. Joe Dunn. How you doing, Joe?
Doing great, Alan.
Well, how's the water clarity this week?
It's going to be finally getting back right again, you know, this roller coaster up and down, mm-hmm. but it's finally settled back out. Hopefully we don't get too much rain coming in through the weekend, but everything should be great.
Well, good deal. How's the fishing been this week so far?
It's been being good. Like I said, you can, you know, they're cutting it off, and it's done got low again. And for this time, that's what we want is, you know, low water. Your catfish, you can go back to that long line and pattern out in the river. You know, that's going to be paying good. Your crappie, you can go back to doing your trolling in your major creeks, vertical jigging right along the edges of the creek channel in the standing timber, or either go to fishing that wood out in the river. You know, and when they pull in water, they'll be bunched up a little bit tighter to the wood or the structure of rocks or the edge of that ledge right now. So, you know, either bottom bouncing or trolling, depending on what they're doing with the water and where you're at that particular time. But everything should be, you know, it should be wide open. It should be a good summertime pattern right now for you guys wanting to, you know, bass fish, you know, your crankbaits and your, you know, anything fishing off those ledges with you. Carolina rigs, you know, and whatever, you know, anything you'd like to pull up that ledge right now, they ought to be jumping on it.
Mm-hmm. And the catfishing still good on the jugs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right now it's going to be back key time doing your longer lines, your 15-plus, you know, 15 to 30-foot lines. You know, go find you some shad. You may have to get up in a creek mouth or go back to some of the sloughs that's got a deeper channel in it, you know, and go to looking for that telltale sign of them, you know, flickering on top of the water. And if you get up there close enough, then take that cast net and throw in there. And generally, it don't take long. If you can find, you know, you may have to ride it to a slough or two, you find a bunch of the shad flickering,
right,
and then get in the back with your cast net. It don't take long to get enough bait doing it that way. Or either put out some little traps and catch you a bunch of little three-finger bream. You know, they're good this time of year, too.
Now, Joe, you mentioned long lining, and offshore, that's a dirty word. We don't like that kind of stuff, us sport fishing guys. But so explain to me what exactly you mean. I'm mostly a saltwater guy. So when you're long lining, where are you trying to have your bait? Are you wanting it on the bottom or just above the bottom?
No, it's usually this time of year you go out through there with your depth finder, and you'll see where they're bunched up at. Usually it's around that 25 to 30 foot. And, you know, over at Miller's Ferry, you got 55 and 60 foot of water in a lot of those straits and in some of those bends. And generally, those are my main lines that catch all the big catfish, my, you know, 30-plus size catfish, 30-pound-plus.
All right, Joe, appreciate the report. Y'all can go see Joe at in Thomasville at Dunn Sports. Thanks a lot, Joe.
All right, appreciate it.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with some special guests right after this.
Have you always wanted to work in the outdoors industry? Are you talented in sales? Here's your opportunity. Great Days Outdoor Media is offering a great base salary plus commissions and bonuses, along with group insurance and benefits with a 20-year-old established brand. It's the most fun you'll ever have building a career. No matter where you live in Alabama or Northwest Florida, email your resume today to info@greatdaysoutdoors.com. Don't delay. Email your resume today to info@greatdaysoutdoors.com. Equal opportunity employer.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available at this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure, whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains. You'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
If you own a business in South Alabama and want to reach the outdoors market with advertising on Alabama's Great Days Outdoors radio show, call 800-597-6828. Our show reaches all over South Alabama, and your message will reach your targeted market. Radio ads can be combined with ads in Great Days Outdoors magazine and reach an even larger audience. Call 800-597-6828 to get all the details. That's 800-597-6828, or visit greatdaysoutdoors.com today.
Hello, this is Ray Scott, and you're listening to Alabama's Great Days Outdoor Radio.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Alan White, along with Joe Baia. Thanks for listening today. Great Days Outdoors magazine subscribers will be receiving their September issue just any day now. It's been mailed out, and you'll start seeing it on the racks. And in that issue, you'll read an article about no-till, no-drill, written by Daryl Bell, our wildlife management writer. And we have Daryl here with us today. We're going to talk about this article and much more with him. Daryl, welcome to the show, babe.
Hey, man. How y'all doing today?
We're doing good, man. Well, I'm really interested in this no-till, no-drill because I'm always interested in saving money and time. And it sounds like when I read your story, this is going to be the ticket for my situation.
Yeah, it works pretty well. You know, there's a lot of misconception with if you don't break the ground up and that, you know, your seeds don't germinate that well. And, you know, there's a lot of misconception when it comes to no-till planting. So
let's start at the beginning. Let's say in a perfect scenario, you really start this process in the springtime, right?
I like to start, if I'm going to change kind of, you know, progress a food plot into no-till, there's kind of a couple of steps to it, and I actually like to start mine in the fall.
Okay.
You could start it in the springtime, but you'd really be wanting to start it around the end of January, which is in the middle of hunting season, because I kind of like to start mine in the fall. And
I guess
kind of how I started.
I guess what I was referring to start in the spring is planting that cover crop that adds nitrogen to your soil for summer is what I was referring to.
Right. Yeah, and you know, there's definitely benefits. I don't mind if I'm switching, you know, on a client's property or my property. If I'm switching to no-till, you can really do it at any time.
Okay.
But for kind of, you know, this time of year purposes, you know, fall is more effective, in my opinion, for getting to no-till.
Well, good. We're just in time.
Go ahead.
Good. We're just in time.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to kind of concentrate more along on those lines. You can definitely start no-till in the springtime. However, when I'm switching to no-till, I do actually like to do one, you know, till or disc before I go into a complete no-till, you know, crop rotation, just so that I can start the playing field, you know, with a, you know, and get everything established well the first time, and then go to no-till from there.
Okay. So the first step is to disc your land if you don't.
Yeah, and see, right now, I guess we can start with right now, like I said. Right now, probably everybody, if they don't have a summer crop in, they've got a lot of early succession and, you know, natural vegetation in their food plots, you know, that could be anywhere, be from ankle high all the way up to head high, depending on if they sprayed it yet. But starting at that point, what I like to do is we're actually going to start this weekend spraying all of our fields to start, you know, letting everything die off and, you know, and try to get ahead of everything before it starts actually maturing all the way, which most of it has, but you're not too late to spray it. And then I'll come in normally the third or fourth week of September, depending on a rain, of course, and disc or till that natural vegetation over. So, like I said, we're starting with a clean slate. And what we'll do is we'll come in and we'll disc everything up and start with bare ground. And the day we disc it, we will overseed 60 pounds per acre of an ulmless wheat. We talked about that, I think, last time, a wheat that doesn't produce a fibrous hair on the seed head. We'll start with 60 pounds per acre of wheat, which is about a half a rate as you would normally do in a standalone cereal grain plot.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with that, and then we'll drag it. We'll drag the wheat in, and then we'll actually roll it with either a cultipacker or a sod roller, whichever one of the two you have access to. That's going to firm that seed bed up and give that ulmless wheat a good, you know, good, make sure it has good seed-to-soil contact. Then we're going to come in and overseed the rest of our seed right on top of that cultipacked wheat. And that's going to be 10 pounds per acre of an arrowleaf clover, 15 pounds an acre of a crimson clover, and 5 pounds per acre of rape. And once we seed that, we'll actually roll it again so it firms that seed bed up. And like I said, that just starts with a clean, fresh seed bank and, you know, a seed bed to get everything going. So that's going to provide, those arrowleafs and the crimson are both annual clovers, and they're going to provide really a great food source in your fall in our area. Up north, they wouldn't produce anything over the winter time, so it's really, you know, more of a design for our area. And then what we do is we come in about the end of January. So at that time, you've got your arrowleaf clover, your crimson, your wheat, and your rape all doing pretty well about the end of January. And we will actually overseed 10 pounds per acre of a Ladino or a white Dutch clover, which is just a perennial clover. we'll overseed that straight into that fall blend. And since we still are going to have a couple of freezes left, hopefully by at the end of January, the freezes will actually work that seed into the soil. The thawing and de-thawing will work it in, so there's no need to roll it or anything like that.
Just leave the existing crop standing, right?
Yeah, yeah. You don't do anything with it. You just leave it there because, I mean, it's one of, for some of those crops, they're at about their peak production point about that time. So you definitely leave all of that standing. You're still going to be in deer season, so you don't want to be going in there doing a whole lot anyway. But you can just put your Ladino clover in a belly spreader or a crank spreader and just walk through there and broadcast it straight into that standing food plot. And that's all you have to do. Then we kind of fast forward, into March and April when deer season's out. The wheat's going to be going to seed, so the seed heads are going to be providing cover for the deer. The rape's going to be dying off. The arrowleaf, the crimson, and the Ladino clover are going to be putting on a ton of high-quality food. So that mix fills up that gap from about the end of deer season when normal fall crops mature, and you put in your summer forage around the end of May. That fills that gap. So it's going to provide forage, for those 3 months when there's normally not anything in there. And then what we'll do is at the end of May, right about the time the crimson clover and the arrowleaf are starting to dry up and get hot, and the Ladino clover is going to stop putting on as much forage, depending on weather, of course, we'll actually come in and we'll either broadcast cowpeas or soybeans into that stand, which at this point is just clover, annuals and perennials, and a dead wheat and dead rape for the most part. That's what the stand is going to be like toward the end of May. Okay. And we'll come in and we'll broadcast our cowpeas and or soybeans into that, depending on the deer densities and how big the plot is. You don't want to put anything in there. It's going to get overbrowed. Broadcast that into it and then roll it. That roller is going to do two things. It's going to give the cowpeas and or the soybeans good seed-to-soil contact, but it's also going to break up those wheat stalks and terminate that wheat so that it's not standing all year long. So at this point, you've got arrowleaf, crimson clover, Ladino clover in it, the rape's dead, the wheat's dead, and the soybeans are planted. So normally by the end of June or so, you'll start seeing like the crimson clovers on the side of the interstate. You notice those all spring and early summer long, and they start to burn out because of the heat. The crimson and the arrowleaves are going to burn out and die, and the Ladino is going to start burning out as well. It's going to start getting dry, and it's not going to be producing as much food and not be as palatable. And about that time, your cowpeas and your soybeans are going to be coming up. You don't have to till to plant big seeds like that, but obviously you're going to get a little less germination on a big seed, so that's why I recommend rolling that in. But the way this is designed is those cowpeas and those soybeans are going to come up and be producing food, through that period of time, through the summer when the Ladino clover is not at its peak period anymore. But it's also going to be shading out the understory of Ladino clover, so it will extend that production period a little bit longer than if the clover was in a standby on its own, getting direct sunlight and our intense heat index that we have. So it will extend the life of the clover. All summer you're going to have an understory of clover and, obviously your standing peas and or beans. So, and then next fall, you just start over. But the good thing is those annual clovers, the crimson and the arrowleaf that you had planted the previous fall, they're going to reseed just like you see them do on the side of the interstate every year. So you don't have to replant that every year. It's going to reseed on its own, and you don't have to plant the Ladino clover every year. The only thing you're going to be planting every year is overseeding a wheat and rape in the fall and overseeding your annual legumes.
So it sounds like the operative is to never have a time during the year where you don't have something growing in your plot. Now, I'm actually going to go help my brother plant some plots this weekend, and he's over in Florida near the Georgia line. And they've got a really low acidity, a low pH there, and so we're going to be making some amendments to the soil, spreading some ag lime and whatnot. What do you recommend as far as lime? We're going to be cutting it in with a disc, but if someone is wanting to, do no-till and they still need to make amendments to their soil, can they just spread the lime right on top, or do they need to cut that in?
So what I like to do is I'll take my soil samples right about the time deer season's going out, so it'll give me kind of a time frame to budget and plan out what we're going to do as far as soil amendments. So what I would do in that case is I would spread the lime and I would disc it in. So if you're going to no-till, the big thing to do is make those soil amendments before you at the time of planting. Either you can go ahead and disc it up and apply the lime during the summertime, and, that saves you kind of that extra step going into the fall, as long as you don't disc it too far ahead of time and have time to get that compacted again. But if you don't disc lime in, you're only going to make a pH change in about the top inch of your soil because you're just not getting that lime. The lime has got to make contact with those soil particles. So if you don't disc it in, you're not going to affect the pH in really only about the top half inch to an inch of soil. So if you were wanting to go to no-till, you absolutely, to get the best results from your lime, you're going to need to disc it in. There's not really,
all right.
You can, like I said, you can spread it on top, but you're not going to get the full, you know, the full change out of it that you're looking for in the level that the roots are going to be growing in.
That's great information. I wish we had more time. For those of you who can't write that fast, pick up a copy of September Great Days Outdoors and read all about it. Thank you, Daryl.
Yes, sir. No problem. Have a good one, guys.
Folks, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back right after this with more Alabama's Great Days Outdoors.
Have you always wanted to work in the outdoors industry? Are you talented in sales? Here's your opportunity. Great Days Outdoor Media is offering a great base salary plus commissions and bonuses, along with group insurance and benefits with a 20-year-old established brand. It's the most fun you'll ever have building a career. No matter where you live in Alabama or Northwest Florida, email your resume today to info@greatdaysoutdoors.com. Don't delay. Email your resume today to info@greatdaysoutdoors.com. Equal opportunity employer.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available at this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure, whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains. You'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
This is Alabama's Great Days Outdoors, brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine and Brooks Motors in Thomasville. Here are your hosts, Alan White and Joe Baia.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Joe Baia. I've got Alan White here with me, and we're going to be talking with Matt Wilkins. Matt Wilkins is with the NWTF Mentored Hunting Program. He's going to tell us a little bit more about what they've got going on this fall. It's a really neat program. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your mentored hunting program that you've got.
Hey, we've got a great opportunity and a great program that we're really proud of. We've got an opportunity for people that really don't have a, not so much a means, but just don't know how to get into hunting and what to do. We've got a program for them that we've partnered up with Alabama DCNR and as well as Alabama Lands Division. Basically what we do is we focus on people 16 years old or older and give them the opportunity to experience hunting for the first time. Man. We do everything from a classroom setting all the way to hands-on with a rifle so that when if they do get the opportunity to harvest the deer, it's not the first time that they're squeezing the trigger.
So if someone wants to sign up for this program, are they going to need to have their hunter safety course done before they work with you guys?
Yes, they will need to do that. And also, too, one thing that we go through with them, and we found this out the first year, is purchasing their license. It's amazing how many people, you know, I think we all kind of take it for granted since we grew up hunting and fishing that, you know, you just go buy your license and go hunting. But people that have never done it before really don't know what to do or know how to get started.
I see. So they go and they get their hunter safety course done and they get their license and then they show up to your program. Now take me through a typical weekend.
A typical weekend, we'll start about 8 o'clock Saturday morning. We have a rally point where we all get together. The Girl Scouts of Southern Alabama and Scoutshire Camp is one of our partners, and they're nice enough to let us use their dining hall. But we'll meet there, and we'll start with introductions, let everybody kind of introduce themselves, get a feel for the room and who all is there. And then we go into a very abbreviated refresher course on hunter safety. Again, safety is the biggest thing that we harp on the whole time. We want everybody to have a great time, but also be safe. From there, we go into hunting situations, and we've actually got a archery 3D deer that we'll bring out, and we'll start talking about shot placement. What do you want to look for? Where do you want to put the crosshairs? How important it is that you're shooting for the exit, not the entrance. and things of that nature. Then from there, we'll go out to the range. We'll go to the range and we'll let the participants get used to the firearm. Like I said before, we don't want the first time that they're squeezing the trigger to be when the deer's standing there. I mean, we all know how much adrenaline's pumping through you to start with, but for a first timer, I can't even imagine what it would be like again. But we spend as much time at the range as they need. There's no rush. It's one-on-one. We've got a great instructor, firearms instructor, and we make sure that the caliber that they're shooting is not too big for the person as well. That's a big lesson we learned right out the gate. Mm-hmm. But then from there we come back, we grab a bite to eat, and we pair up with mentors, and then we head to the woods. And then at the after the hunt, we get everybody back to the dining hall, and from there, hopefully we're showing them how to clean a deer and how to quarter it up, put it in an ice chest, and get it ready for processing.
Matt, it's always amazing to me how many adults that I do meet, even in Alabama, that have never been hunting. And about half of those people that I meet are not interested in hunting. The other half just never has had the opportunity. Do you have any numbers on the percentages of, you know, let's say, male adults in Alabama that actually hunt? And do you know what the percentages are?
Unfortunately, I do not know what the percentages are in Alabama. Nationwide, we're talking almost less than, I believe, 10% hunt. Hmm. And what we're finding, and right now it's kind of a neat time with this. You've got a big movement right now, field to fork. You know, people wanting to grow their own vegetables, want to know where their food comes from before they put it on the table at the end of the day. So we're kind of starting to cater, not so much cater, but look into people who are interested in field to fork, and they get to come out and they get to, you know, they get to know where their meat comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you're right. It is amazing in South Alabama how many people we come in contact with on a daily basis that don't hunt. And a lot of the people that are participating are not people that don't agree with hunting or don't like to hunt. It's just people that have never had anybody take right. the opportunity to show them.
Exactly. And that's where you guys, your new program is really going to help. I think that's a great idea. We wish you all the luck in the world, and if there's anything we can do to help promote it, we will. Matt, we appreciate you being on today, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you all.
All right, and folks, we'll be back right here next week with more hunting and fishing for you. For Joe Baya and Alan White, we're wishing you all a great day outdoors.